The nature of reality is something that has plagued philosophers since the dawn of time. Plato proposed that we should question the nature of our reality. In Book 7 of the Republic, Plato says that our world is nothing more than a cave where we sit and watch shadows on a wall. Every now and then, one of us gets the urge to look behind at the fire casting the shadows. And still, every now and then, the one who looks back is dragged up from the cave into the sunlight and exposed to the light, the reality of the real world. Of course, Plato was speaking about enlightenment here. However, the concept of living in a shadow reality is still present. Many people live their lives in a shadow of illusion and never once see the truth of reality. And if one were to see the light, if they were exposed to the truth of reality, and then tried to explain the truth to the world, a world whose vision is so accustomed to the dark that listening about a bright light would only cause them pain, that person would be deemed crazy and cast aside, or worse, killed. This has happened many times throughout the course of history. Take, for instance, the Green Children of Woolpit. The story here has two children, brother and sister, appearing in the town of Woolpit, England, sometime in the 12th century. These siblings looked normal enough except for their skin, which was a pale green in color. They also spoke in a strange and unknown language, and they only ate raw, broad beans. It was eventually discovered, mostly due to the sister, the one surviving child, her brother had died due to malnutrition, that they were from another realm where only twilight and forest existed, a realm the girl called St. Martin's Land. Thanks to the director of Laos during this century, Godolphin Llanlys, the history books only mentioned the incident of the Green Children and many similar incidents scattered through time as a blurb, and for good reason. You see, dear listener, the children that claim to be from St. Martin's Land are from a realm you have already heard of before, except you would know it as the land of fairy, or fairyland. Yes, fairies are real. And they're not the cute little sprites Hollywood would have you believe. On the contrary, fairies are highly intelligent and dangerous creatures. As an agent of Laos, I was trained to know my history of fairy folk. Throughout my career as a field agent, I have come across such creatures before and handled them with care, but what awaited me in Montaigne's castle was beyond my imagination. The bridge from Stagfrost Site B transported me to a long bridge that led into a large castle that pierced the heavens. The air was cold, the wind howled. I peered over my shoulder and saw nothing but sky and clouds. I wondered how high up I was, but decided it was best not to think about it too much. Cautiously, I sauntered across this skywalk that was occasionally visited by passing fluffy clouds. I was thankful that this bridge had sides I could grasp as I made my way towards the monstrous door that led into Montaigne's castle. I didn't have to do anything. The enormous door opened on its own, allowing me to walk right in. I wasn't sure, but I could have sworn that as the door began to close behind me, it laughed. The inside of the castle was nothing how I imagined it to be. I expected to see a long hallway decorated with portraits or stained glass windows. Instead, I was greeted by large, arched walls with clear windows that overlooked the deep blue sky and greenery all around me. Tall deciduous and conifer trees appeared here where pillars would have stood in a castle this size. The floor was made up of grass and fallen foliage. A small stream snaked around the trees and the main path that led to a magnificent oak tree that towered over all the others. This oak had a wide trunk with twisted branches that stretched over the twin stairway that flanked it. Judging by its thick and scarred bark, I guess the tree was wise and strong. Near the first massive branch, a few inches to the center of the tree's front, was an old wound that left a deep indentation that probably led to the interior of the tree. I pulled out the Prestige, a small device in the shape of a silver medallion, broke it in half, and threw one of the halves into the tree's trunk. This might come in handy later on, I thought. I pocketed the other half and made my way up the stairwell. I found myself in another grand hall. This time, there was more building than there was nature. However, I was still surrounded by foliage and flowers that grew from small streams that ran through the middle of the hall. Above me were three massive chandeliers containing dancing flames that twirled around each oversized lamp. In the center of this wondrous place stood a woman encased in diamond. She appeared to be asleep at first, but upon closer examination, it was clear the woman was a corpse. I couldn't help but wonder who this woman was and how she ended up on display here. "Morgan Le Fay," said a voice from behind me. I turned around and saw a man dressed in a tuxedo with long overcoat and top hat. "She powers this castle of mine." The man stepped out of the shadows and into the light. He took off his top hat. His face was elegant with sharp features, a well-trimmed beard, and long hair tied into a ponytail. The gentleman unknown, Montaigne. "King Arthur's half-sister," I said. "How's that possible?" "The Fey folk aren't like humans," Montaigne said. "Death is not debilitating for them. Instead of decay, the Fey enters an eternal slumber. Morgana here, being of Fey blood, entered that eternal slumber many moons ago. But despite her strange hibernation, her power still courses through her veins." Montaigne placed his gloved hand on the diamond. "This crystal saps Morgana's energy and transfers it into this castle through the floor." Montaigne was right. The diamond was feeding the castle Morgan Le Fay's power, and by doing so, it allowed the castle to grow an interior forest. It also allowed the castle to fly. In essence, the castle was alive. "I'm sure you've already put it together," Montaigne said. "This castle is alive, and it does my bidding." "With all your abilities, why do you choose to cause such chaos and destruction in the human realm? I mean, you've created your own world here. Why not use your powers for the betterment of humanity?" Montaigne scoffed. "Humanity, never-ending plague." He looked at me with those gray eyes. "Are you familiar with Thrasymachus?" Thrasymachus, dear listener, was a sophist. That is, a teacher in ancient Greece. His character is well known in Plato's Republic. I nodded. "He believed that justice was for only the strong," Montaigne said, "and that injustice on a larger scale was freer and stronger, and therefore more masterly than justice. Humanity is nothing more than a globe populated with Thrasymachuses. Every human wants to dominate others, and none of them are interested in learning differently or changing for the better." Montaigne paused and thought for a moment. "Tell me, Kai, why would I choose to help such a flawed species?" "Because you're an intelligent being," I said, "and the proper thing to do is to try and improve the social order so that the Thrasymachuses of the world may one day open their eyes and change." "But they won't change, Kai. You and I both know that. Your world is ruled by this type of people. They refuse to change. Therefore, I refuse to help." "That's not fair," I said. "You, whatever you are, have the ability to do something miraculous, but because you're stuck on some platonic conception of humanity, you let the good suffer." "Humanity is weak-willed," Montaigne snarled, "prone to evil. I give them a nudge in one direction, and then they turn to violence over and over again. You're right. Not every human is willing to change their ways, at least not once childhood has passed. But therein lies a possible solution. The youth. If they could be taught better by those who have opened their eyes, then human evil may not need to be some kind of unfortunate pathology. Montaigne shot me a smile. You truly are amazing. Even now, knowing what my love has done to yours, and knowing that it was I who orchestrated that attack, you continue to champion humanity despite yourself. It's not about me, Montaigne, I said. It's about the greater good of humanity. I'm quite aware it was you who ordered Lacrima to kill, or rather attempt to kill Victoria. But what would I accomplish by trying to attack you? I would only be continuing the toxic cycle of violence. Montaigne chuckled. You almost sound inhuman. You know, Kai, you remind me of myself. You think differently from all the other so-called protectors of humanity. MI6, CIA, Mossad, Laios, to name a few, are all the same. Their officers and agents, in the end, succumb to human corruption, emotion. But you haven't. Why is that? What fuels you? My soul, I said. Morality. Humility. My position in life is not determined by what I want, but rather what I must do for the greater good of the world. That is something I vowed to do when I became an agent for Laios. An emotion, Montaigne, is not a corruption. It is a gift that must be mastered by the individual. The corruption is to grow and show a cold heart devoid of emotion. Preposterous, Montaigne scoffed. You're nothing more than an expendable instrument for Patrice Lenlis and the world. You're greater than that. Join me. Together, we can accomplish so much. Montaigne started for the far end of the hall. Come, let me show you what I mean. I followed Montaigne into the next room. Another forest. Except this place was dim, with spinning chandeliers high above serving as radio stars. Large, twisted trees made up the majority of this unnatural environment. Every now and then, I would see a sprite or two flutter past me. They would keep their distance and stare at me with curious expressions. It was clear the Montaigne had somehow gained the ability to control the fairy folk. The Fae, dear listener, or fairies as they're more commonly known, are beings that have existed alongside humans for ages. Originally known as the Tuatha De Danann, the Fae are intelligent and wondrous beings. On average, they don't care much for humans and don't disturb humans either. But if humans go knocking on their fairy ports, commonly found throughout Ireland, then the Fae will answer with silencing annoyance. But if your image of a fairy is that of a small enchanted creature, the size of a thumb with wings, think Tinkerbell, then you are gravely mistaken. Fairies come in many different shapes and sizes. They can shapeshift into any form they like, even that of a human. And it goes without saying that the Fae can also come in terrifying forms. As I walked through this darkened wood, I could hear the gallop and neighing of a horse nearby. Montaigne, I said, is this where you've decided to hide? On the contrary, he said, from somewhere between the trees. This is where I decide whether you are worthy of joining me or not. Out of the darkness, a massive horse appeared. It stomped its powerful front legs and snorted. However, this horse had no head. Sitting on its back was a headless rider holding its head in one hand, a long whip made of human spinal cord in the other. I turned away and avoided the gaze of that grinning rider. The headless horse snorted once again. Its rider, I knew, was twirling that spine whip around. I could hear the air whooshing about. Therefore, I jumped behind a nearby tree as fast as I could. The whip missed me by an inch. The tree took the brunt of the hit, giving its thick bark a new scar. This headless horseman, or rather, this Dullahan, was either going to kill me or take my eyes. Fighting this immortal being was pointless. I would never win. No, there was only one thing for me to do. I reached into one of my coat's pockets and pulled out a golden coin. Before the Dullahan could unleash its bony whip again, I stuck my hand out and waved the coin in front of him. The air whooshed, and the coin that I held firmly between my thumb and index finger was gone. You see, dear listener, the Dullahan is a fairy from Celtic mythology. This headless horseman is fierce, and if you're unlucky enough to lay eyes on it, well, it will be the last thing you ever see. Once the Dullahan speaks your name, it will drag your soul into the afterlife. But on rare occasions, if the Dullahan chooses to let you go, it will do so at a price, that price usually being your sight. But should you ever come face to face with this creature, the best thing you can do is offer it a piece of gold. Any gold will do. If you offer the Dullahan gold, it will spare you for a time and might let you keep your sight. Montaigne, I said, yelling into the void of the forest. Enough games! Very well, Kai, he said, his voice echoing throughout every inch of the forest. Then walk through the wood and meet me in the next room. The darkened wood led me into a large domed area that overlooked a clear blue sky. As I walked farther into this room, the floor beneath me became less foliage and more window. Before I knew it, I was standing on a glass floor that overlooked clouds and ocean for hundreds of feet below me. It appeared that we weren't in Australia anymore. Exactly where the castle had moved to, I had no idea. All I could see was ocean and sky. Then I saw it, a small black object flying my way. I sidestepped to avoid it. It was Montaigne's top hat, except that now the brim had adapted a razor-sharp edge to it. Always alert, Montaigne said, appearing from behind me. But how long can you maintain that calm? The gentleman unknown swung his fists at me. He landed two powerful blows that got me in my stomach and face. I took a few steps back. Where are we? I said, spitting out blood. Over the Pacific Ocean, he said, grinning. I couldn't think of a better place for you to die, but it doesn't have to be. This can be your baptism if you decide to join me. What do you say? Absolutely not. Then that ocean below will make a fine grave. Montaigne took off his trench coat. But Kai, think about it for a moment. Together, we could change the world, rid it of the human race, and allow the Fae and other capable species to roam the plane of humanity. That wouldn't work, I said. The Fae will have nothing to do with the human plane, you know that. The sunlight alone would harm their fine skin. And besides, they've grown too accustomed to magic, which would cancel out in the human plane. Details. Always the details with you. Montaigne swung his trench coat over his shoulder. Okay, I'll bite. Convince me to help humanity. The one species God himself has abandoned once already. Humanity is still young, I said, prone to much error. And while it may seem that violence is in their nature, the truth is that they don't know any better. There are those in charge who have lost their way and traded in their souls for money and power. They won't allow for change because they're afraid to change, so they corrupt and infect to keep their status. And those that are good and want change are too afraid to step up, because they know that doing so puts them in great danger of being assassinated by the children in charge. But suppose you and I did team up. We could help the world open their eyes to truth. like Plato's allegory of the cave, we could lead humanity out of the shadows of the cave and into the sunlight and sky and stars. Imagine it, Montaigne. That world, a world that could achieve peace. What a world that would be. A boring world, Montaigne said. Humans are much too simple to truly know what peace is. You said it yourself. Humanity is still young. Youth. A blessing and a huge curse. He paused. I tried to change the world once, but all that got me was near deaths.
When did you do this?
Centuries ago, he said. Of course, back then I was known by other names. Nicholas Flamel, the Comte de Saint-Germain, and Fulcanelli, he sighed. I've tried so many times to help humanity. I tried seeking out the smartest people I could and open their eyes. But in the end, they all chose to remain blind. So you see, Kai, it's a pointless endeavor to make any change happen.
Who exactly are you?
I don't have the slightest idea, Kai, Montaigne said. Nor do I care.
I thought for a moment and said, you change your name every few centuries. You've lived long enough to go from a kind-hearted gentleman to a jaded aristocrat. You're talented. You're intelligent. You can deceive exceptionally well. And over time, you've gained a thirst for chaos. I paused and thought for a moment. The way this guy spoke and carried himself was familiar to me. Then the terrifying thought streaked across my mind. I think you forgot to mention one of your names, an infamous one.
Oh, and what name would that be?
Sand. Montaigne laughed.
So you figured it out. He clapped his hands. Good job, Kai. I knew you would.
This whole time, I said. You could have killed me at any moment. Why did you let me live?
It's been a long time since I had a worthy adversary, Montaigne said. And to be honest, watching you work was the most fun I've had in ages.
But I killed you.
You killed something, all right, Montaigne said. But what you killed was just an illusion of myself.
Why have me come here?
When you live as long as I have, your mind begins to figure things out, begins to unravel the fabric of space-time itself. Why do you think humans only live 70 to 100 years or so? Safety feature, I'd say. And to ensure this, make the humans violent by nature, and you guarantee no one will survive long enough for their minds to ever become truly enlightened. An enlightened mind that romps around like the mind of God understands, over time, that this whole existence is meaningless. There is no bettering the world. Only humanity as a whole can do that, and that will never happen.
I refuse to believe that, I said. Existence does not have to be meaningless.
You see, that's why you're different, Montaigne said. I used to say that and thought I meant it, but I didn't. But when you say it, Kai, I actually believe you.
Montaigne took out a small remote from his jacket pocket.
In my hand, I hold the trumpet that will sound the end of time. It is up to you, Kai, to stop me from unleashing Judgment Day on all humans.
Montaigne began to walk around in a circle. Then he unleashed his shadow self, the persona of the gentleman unknown I had grown accustomed to seeing, the faceless man on me. Shadow Montaigne attacked me with a barrage of punches and kicks that sent me flying across the room. The deadly assault did not stop. All I could do was block the hits the best I could.
End it, Kai, Montaigne said. My shadow self won't stop until you're dead. Fight back.
I couldn't fight back. Not because I couldn't, but rather, if I fought back, I would be giving Montaigne exactly what he wanted, violence. I had to prove to him, and in some ways, myself, that I could defeat him without the use of deadly force. As Shadow Montaigne kept pounding away at me, I remembered the prestige. Groaning, I pulled out the medallion that was split in half and threw it at Montaigne with all the strength I had. The prestige hit Montaigne right on the chest, where it then proceeded to attach itself to its heart. "What?" Montaigne looked at me, wide-eyed. "No, you must destroy me. What are you doing?" "Finding a way to prove you wrong." "Ah, your futile effort." Montaigne let go of the remote in his hand. The small device fell to the ground and seeped through the glass. I watched as it made its way far below into the ocean. "I suppose only time will tell now which of us is right." The prestige unleashed its effect, and in the blink of an eye, Montaigne vanished before me and was teleported to the other half of the medallion, which was located inside the large oak tree by the castle entrance. There, Montaigne would fall under an eternal sleep until the medallion was pulled out of his heart. This gadget, dear listener, was infused with Merlin's spell for eternal slumber, the same spell that doomed King Arthur's great magician to an eternal slumber when he, Merlin, fell for Vivian, or the Lady of the Lake's, deception. Shadow Montaigne dispersed into a cloud of smoke. I stood up and tried to catch my breath, but, as usual, there was no time to relax, for soon the castle began to rumble. It was time for me to get the hell out of Montaigne's floating castle. On my way out, however, I did stop by the diamond-encased Morgan Le Fay and use Fenrir's fang at the tooth of the mythological Norse wolf, Loki's son, and killer of Odin, to crack the diamond. All it took was a quick stab for the tooth to crack this diamond shell. Within seconds, the whole diamond shattered to pieces. The corpse of Morgan Le Fay opened its eyes and glanced at me before dispersing into millions of fireflies that flew up into the infinite ceiling. My last image of Montaigne's castle was the oak tree containing the sleeping body of Montaigne. I watched as the castle started to come down on the tree, but the old oak stood its ground and held steady. Upon my return from Montaigne's castle, I was informed that a large submarine volcano in the Tongan archipelago, which is located in the Pacific Ocean, erupted with vehement force. You will remember this, dear listener, as it erupted on the 15th of January, 2022. The thing is, however, no such thing ever occurred. But after my return from the castle, this was an event that had occurred somehow. The bridge that led to Montaigne's castle crumbled to pieces the instant this agent made it back to the human plane. However, this agent knows that it must still exist somewhere and that one day this agent may have to revisit it. Cameron, Blade, and this agent set out to investigate how on earth such a thing could have happened. Obviously, this event was Montaigne's doing. Whatever that remote was that he threw down from his castle caused that volcano to erupt. What worried this agent wasn't so much the volcano itself, but rather the loud boom it sent out. The shockwave traveled for miles in all directions. The trumpet sounding the end of time. Before this agent could dedicate any time to this mystery, this agent had the memory-altering unit alter Victoria Lakatos' mind. She survived her injuries, thanks to the intelligencers in Adelaide. And after much thought, this agent found it best for Victoria to forget everything about Laios. It was much too dangerous, and this agent did not want to see her suffer the way she did again. This agent went to see her one last time before she completely forgot who Agent Kai was and, silently, said goodbye. The MAU then transported her over to one of Jamaica's beaches with her altered mind. As far as Victoria Lakatos was concerned, She had somehow survived a devastating plane crash and floated for several days on the ocean on a plane part until she washed up on a Jamaican shore. Cameron told this agent to take a couple weeks off to rest the body and mind. This agent took him up on this offer, but the vacation was cut down to 1 week. It appeared that that boom had done more than cause a loud bang in the air. The boom shockwave caused the Sesshoseki Stone, or Killing Stone, in Japan to split in two on the 5th of March 2022, releasing an evil yokai by the name of Tamamo no Mei. This agent, under the legend of Lem Yucker, departed for Japan to investigate this event. The world is a sphere of the beautiful and the sublime. It holds vast mysteries waiting to be discovered and solved. Of course, sometimes these mysteries are best left undiscovered. But when they are somehow brought to the light of day, then this agent will always be there to ensure the world's safety. Perhaps one day, humanity will change. Perhaps one day, the world will see peace and not fall to pieces. But so long as evil forces exist in this world and try to corrupt and destroy humanity, this agent, dear listener, promises to always be your champion. I'm Agent Kai, and I work for a clandestine organization known as the League of International Observation and Security. My hope is that you, dear listener, will one day wake up to the world.